This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we uncover the hidden past of a Port Townsend resident who, for nearly three decades, has been modestly avoiding talk of her fabulous life in show business. Today, she finally tells her stories. And now, let's go inside the Compass. Lynn Webster has lived in Port Townsend for nearly 30 years and is fairly well known around town, but most people don't know about her long and colorful background in show business. She worked in radio, television, and film, and if you're around the average age of a Jefferson County resident, I can almost guarantee that you've seen her work in television commercials and national advertising campaigns. She's also part of a long line of actors, entertainers, and media artists. Her father was Dave Willock, a character actor who appeared in a remarkable 181 movies and TV shows, including the Joan Crawford and Betty Davis film, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and TV shows like Green Acres and Lou Grant. We began by asking Lynn Webster about her dad and his career.
My folks were vaudevillians. My dad had dropped out of college in his senior year to help support his mother, father, and two younger siblings. He had a partner in vaudeville. They did an act like Laurel and Hardy. My dad had been appearing on radio as a comedian while he was going to the university. His partner was Jack Carson, who was just a boy that was hanging around, you know, wanted to leave home. He had very, very wealthy parents. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of supported getting them off onto the road and into the right circuits because they did very well.
For those who don't know, tell us who Jack Carson was.
All right. He turned into a well-known movie star, Warner Brothers. And he's in a lot of Joan Crawford movies.
So your folks were in show business before you were even born. So that's all you knew growing up was show business.
Yes. Well, we lived on Catalina Street, just south of Hollywood Boulevard. My dad, he had a contract at 20th at that time.
20th Century Fox.
Right. And then he also worked in all the studios, though, RKO and Paramount.
Now, when you were growing up, you're living in the Hollywood area, and your folks are show people, so to speak. Did you have a lot of famous people coming in and out of the house, friends of your folks? tell some stories. What do you remember?
Well, there's a scandalous one I can tell you about, which was really good. Ooh. I don't know if this should be on the air.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. An agent's party, and this was in Toluca Lake. And it was the agent's house, and my next down sister, I'm the eldest of five, was only two, so this would make me six or seven. So I was kind of, you know, walking around and observing everything. I was standing by the pool and watching Lana Turner, beautifully arranged on a chaise lounge with the white two-piece bathing suit, almost like the movie, you know, the famous scene. And Teron Bay was sucking her toes. And my mama said, whoops.
And you were thinking, what's that all about?
That's an interesting turn of events, yeah. My dad had when I was 9 years old, he had a beautiful workshop in the garage. And he was a spokesman on, you know, live TV for Delta Power Tools. So he would have to go and do a stand-up show demonstrating one of the pieces. But the funny thing, I would come home from school and walk down the driveway, and Burt Lancaster was coming out of the garage with a man called, Tommy Wells. They had been tumblers in the circus. Before Burt Lancaster was discovered as an actor. And here was this gorgeous creature, you know, walking out with Tommy. And Tommy was this little man that, did a lot of movies also. And Burt Lancaster did not have his teeth in.
Oh my gosh.
His teeth had all been knocked out in the, you know, with the tumbling, and so it was lunch hour.
So what you're telling me is all those years when we see Burt Lancaster in the film with this great smile.
With his great mouth, yeah.
Those were fake teeth.
But he was gorgeous and he was very nice.
Tell us about your siblings. Were you the only one in your family that followed into the business, show business?
One of my sisters worked at Warner Brothers.
Ah.
She was executive secretary. Then she got into real estate. Next to youngest sister was quite a good actress and had done some very good things. Her name would be Margaret Willock for that. Her married name is Margaret Jones now. When she had her children, she didn't want to be pursuing any acting. Mm-hmm. But she did some good things, movies and TV. She did a segment of, I think it was called something Ben, about a bear.
Gentle Ben.
Gentle Ben.
Yes,
Gentle Ben.
I remember that.
Okay. And she was a young girl with a beautiful costume, you know, the country girl costume, long skirt. And they put meat in the hem of her skirt and told her to run up a hill.
Oh, my gosh.
And another bear.
Oh, my gosh.
Was supposed to be.
I got the bear to chase her.
Yeah. I said, honey, you don't do that. You're in Screen Actors Guild. You tell, you call the, say, call the guild.
So when they say
beautiful.
No animals were harmed in the making of this film, apparently
my sister almost lost a toe. Yeah. She was Lee Grant's daughter on the Lee Grant Show, which was a marvelous, hilarious TV thing. My youngest sister, Teresa, was a dancer in Las Vegas.
Oh.
She had been ballet trained, but she was in a line of girls when the first MGM Grand opened up. So they did scenes like from all the movies, you know, Meet Me in St. Louis, you know that.
Yeah.
And, you know, had numbers and lots of costume changes.
With your late husband, Buck Pennington, you had a daughter named Jessica, who became an actress and a voiceover artist. And we'll talk about Jessica in a moment. But what line of work was Buck Pennington in?
Buck was a videotape director and producer for commercials and big shows, you know, like the musical shows. And he worked for KTTV, so some of the things were shown on network at the same time. One thing that was particularly interesting, because I had to be the script clerk for them, the budget was low, and we worked in trucks. But the show was Meet Me at Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Disneyland, I think, was 5 years old. And for a summer show, they had big bands. And so we'd have to go out and lay cable and set up the, you know, the remote, tape the show.
Anything else that you want to mention about Buck and his work before we move on to Jessica?
Yes.
Okay, good.
a big thing. When President Kennedy was assassinated, Buck got a telephone call from Edward R. Murrow.
Ah.
And Murrow wanted Buck to come back to D.C. and work putting together a videotape show in conjunction with the release of the Warren Commission report. So the Warren Commission was meeting and getting all of their stuff together. And Buck went back. They were putting together this videotape to release at the same time for the world, you know, to explain it as to what had been decided.
Now, you're talking about the Warren Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And this videotape would be like a documentary?
Yes.
About the Warren Commission, which...
describing what had happened with the assassination.
Right. For those who don't know, the Warren Commission was investigating the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Yes.
And it was somewhat controversial, to say the least.
Yes.
In their conclusion that it was a lone assassin.
Murrow had died shortly after we had moved back. We moved back to D.C.
Edward R. Murrow, of course, a famous newsman.
Famous man, yeah.
And known for his integrity.
Absolutely. So he had died. The new man that came in didn't have near the background or the clout. And as this videotape was being put together, the Justice Department under Bobby Kennedy came in and confiscated everything that they had.
Meaning confiscated the videotapes that your husband at the time, Buck Pennington,
had been putting together from all of these people all over the country.
Interesting.
Very.
Do you have any idea, did Buck talk about any conclusions or evidence or anything that
yes,
that he had produced?
Because hundreds, thousands of people. No, it wasn't, you know, just one man in one office. No, this is all over the country.
Right.
The stories.
And you're talking conspiracy.
Sure.
So your late husband had put together a documentary on this, and it never saw the light of day.
Oh, no. It's locked up.
Attorney General Robert Kennedy and his people took it away.
Right.
Wow. Well, that's a whole nother show. But let's move on to your daughter, Jessica. She's a star of stage and screen, including TV shows The West Wing and Frasier. But she also does a lot of voiceover work. So tell us a little about Jessica.
She prefers stage work.
Acting on the stage.
Yes. She's done a lot of musicals. She was in a very good production of Cabaret. She won an L.A. Critics Award for that.
Did she play the lead?
Yes.
Sally Bowles?
Yep.
The Liza Minnelli role, as we would say.
And then just last year, here she was again as Liza Minnelli in The Boy from Oz in L.A.
She's still working in the business?
Well, yes. You mentioned about the voiceovers and the dubbing and the looping. She does other voices. So when she was in college, Michael's division, by this time, my husband Michael.
Michael Webster.
Michael Webster.
This is why you're Lynn Webster to this day.
He was working for Walt Disney. So they were going to do a primetime Disney evening thing. And I don't remember the name of it. Oh, my God. I should, because my daughter still gets residuals for it.
Is that right?
It was like an hour show.
The Disney show? The What Wonderful World of Disney? That show?
Well, yes. Well, it was gone, so it wasn't the original.
I Googled on the IMDb, Internet Movie Database, Jessica Pennington. Mm-hmm. She's been the voice in cartoons, animation, all kinds of things.
Yes.
Hundreds of things.
So
we know her voice, even if we don't know her face.
I know. And half the time, I don't know it's her voice. She told me when Sex and the City, the first movie, came out, she said, go see it. Go see it. Tell me how many times you can hear me. You know, she called the next day, and how many times could you hear me? And I said, 3. And she said, 7.
She has 7 different voices, different characters?
What it was she was replacing lines that another actress had said that they had to change for some reason or other.
They messed it up.
And she can do that voice.
Wow.
Yeah, she does that.
So she's an impressionist as well.
Yes.
Interesting. Now, her husband, Kevin Quinn, is also in the business.
Yes.
What does he do?
He started as an actor. He was from New York. He didn't like being in films. And how that would happen, I can't imagine, because he was in some pretty good things. And he's a coach and dialect teacher. So people come to him, British people, and then he teaches them how to do the part and sounding like an American. That's the easiest way for me to describe it.
Now, your other daughter is Catherine Couturier.
Yes.
And she is part of a California film production with her husband.
Yes.
Bill.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about Kathy.
She was a producer.
Uh-huh. Everyone in your family is in the Hollywood show business.
Not all. But they kind of blend into it, I guess.
We're speaking with Lynn Webster, who's a central figure in a long line of actors, entertainers, and media moguls. You did set design, props, wardrobe, and writing for TV and national advertising campaigns. When and how did you get into business?
Well, my summer job in high school and then the first year of college was at the CBS radio station. Mm-hmm. I was a messenger. It was before there would be faxes and things on your desk that you could turn on and get your messages.
Okay. So what are some of your favorite memories from your radio days?
I saw so many things because at the radio station, there would be shows that they would be putting on.
Live shows.
Like I know Eddie Fisher was a regular on a lot of the music shows. And that was when Debbie Reynolds was dating him, and she was a big star. Mm-hmm. And she'd come running in, you know, after work and see Eddie getting ready for something. You know, so it was interesting.
How did you end up in Port Townsend?
Michael came up to Port Townsend as the producer from Leo Burnett Advertising. Michael came up with the director and producer to okay using the lighthouse here as part of a Maytag washing machine commercial. It was in March. It was horrible weather. And this would have been in 1979, I do believe.
For our listeners who don't remember those old Maytag commercials, the premise was the Maytag repairman is the loneliest guy in the world because no one ever calls him because Maytags never break down. That's why they right. wanted to do it at a lighthouse, right?
Yes.
And Port Townsend has a lighthouse.
So here, a beautiful lighthouse. And it was just right for the commercial because the commercial was going to be Jesse White was the Maytag man. And he's in a little outboard boat on the water. And they actually shot this elderly
yes, I remember him.
Character actor dressed up in parkas and stuff with the Maytag hat on, you know, in the small boat that they had to rent from the boat harbor here. And the pictures of him in the water. And then, of course, the approaching to the lighthouse. And the premise of the commercial was the Maytag man goes into the lighthouse, and he has been called there by the lighthouse keeper, who does not have a problem with his Maytag washing machine. He just wants company. So the two have tea.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, that part, all of that part was done on a stage in Hollywood.
Of course.
So this was just for an exterior shot. But Michael was here in town, and it was freezing cold, and they stayed overnight in the Manresa Castle. And when he came home, he said, we've got to get back up there the first chance we get. So in December, there was open time on both of our schedules, and we came up, spent a wonderful week looking around. Our idea was to get a Victorian and play with it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael said he didn't want to die with a putty knife in his teeth, so we...
So Victorian was out.
That was out.
Yes.
But we had such a wonderful impression with Port Townsend at that time. Calla Point had a sales office down on Water Street, and we would walk by it every day. So we drove out to Calla Point and bought a lot. That was in 79, yes,
okay.
Because we started building the house on that one lot in 89.
So you held the property for 10 years.
10 years.
During those 10 years, you were back in California?
Yes. So Jessica was the last of the kids that was going to go to college. We just cleaned up our acts and moved up here.
So you retired up here. By the time you came up here, you were both out of the business.
Yes. I didn't complain about what I did. I really had a wonderful time for 37 years of doing all the different parts that my work evolved.
So let's talk about some of the things that you were doing during those 37 years in the business. So I know some of the stories, but I know there are trigger words. Some of these stories I don't know, and all I know are the trigger words. So I'm going to say some phrases to you.
Okay.
And if they trigger a story, let's hear the story. Dustin Hoffman and One Sheets for the movie Ishtar. Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah. He and Warren Beatty came into the soundstage studio. They were just funny. The photographer said to me, Lynn, tell Dustin that your daughter Jessica is in Carnegie Mellon. And Dustin Hoffman turns and says, she is. Did she get in? And does 5 minutes on how wonderful, you know, for your daughter. Yeah, it was very, very interesting.
Florence Henderson, the Brady Bunch actress, that's how most people know her, who also played Maria on stage in The Sound of Music. Do you have a story about Florence Henderson?
Well, she was in L.A. doing the roadshow for The Sound of Music. And she and another Broadway star, Bill Hayes, he was in town doing Bye Bye Birdie mm-hmm. at the time. So the two of them were to do this great big musical number for the car that, and I don't remember which car it was, but it was big, beautiful, you know, a giant crane on a great big stage, and the two of them dancing and singing, you know, for this commercial. And she said to me afterwards, I was there for, I guess, her wardrobe, and she said, I want you to come and see the show. And we'll go out afterwards. She had just had her first child, and she was traveling with a nurse for the baby, and she was nursing the baby and doing the show.
The show Sound of Music.
and she wanted to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband, Buck, said, sure, you know, we'll do that. And we saw the show, which was wonderful, and hop into her limousine, and we drop off the nurse and the baby at the hotel, and then hit all the pubs in Pasadena.
So you went out bar hopping with Florence Henderson.
Of course. And she was adorable. Just, you know, this darling, darling woman, very totally charming, and had this wonderful night. And then years later, I was working for a company, and I was to go to Florence's house with the director and an advertising agency person for Wesson Oil to meet her, and she was going to show us bathing suits that she was going to wear for this particular Wesson Oil commercial. And her children were in it, her sons also. So this is how many years later? It was quite a while later. And so she's in a very pretty home up in Truesdale Estates. Mm-hmm. And we go into the house, and she pops out of a hallway and walks right up to me and says, "Hi, I know you."
She remembered you?
We went pubbing. So we had a very good time shooting that commercial. That was done on the beach. And of course, she was wired for sound, you know, with the bathing suit. So we're going to break for lunch, and the kids go off with the social worker, and she and I head for the wardrobe truck, and she puts her finger to her lips, like, "Don't say anything." Mm-hmm. And she points, and I unplug her sound equipment.
Oh, what were you up to?
Oh, we talked about everybody on the...
Here's another trigger. Richard Nixon's 1960 presidential campaign.
Oh,
you have a story about that?
This is a biggie. Okay, so I was working for BBDO Advertising. The ad agencies were given the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, and this was just for the presidential. So here I was, and of course I'm a John Kennedy rabid fan, and we're given Richard Nixon. So this is my job. You know, I have to go and do this. And the first debate had happened, and it was in black and white television, and Nixon looked terrible, and Kennedy looked, you know, relaxed and young and perky. And so we had to come up with, for the second debate was, you know, right away. So here, all of this commotion, we had to get the makeup man at NBC, and Emmy Fiorentino, the lighting director from New York City, made a lighting plot.
You had to save his campaign for him.
Yeah, yeah. We were all hustling, you know, all coming up with all these ideas. A lot of pressure and push to do this. So from the second debate until the election day, I was on Nixon and all his cronies.
Mm-hmm. And his family.
And his family.
And
yep.
Didn't you have to babysit his kids one day?
Well, that was election day. That was very traumatic. No, ordinarily I was just with, you know, like the studio people. We would have to go into television stations and actually movie studios because they were all volunteering time and money to make the commercials and to give the time, you know, for live appearances and things like that. So that had been my main push. But we were all kind of lounging around the Ambassador Hotel on election day. My Secret Service man had taken me to my poll where I voted for Kennedy.
Uh-huh. And you didn't tell the Nixon people that, I'm sure.
Oh, no. I was very proper. I was in my 20s at this point. Mm-hmm. In a suit, high heels and a briefcase, you know, mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. So, like I say, we're lounging around the hotel because at some point, quite early in the day, Nixon, they had figured out that he was not going to win.
You could tell before it was over that
tell,
it was over.
You could tell before it was over. And it was amazing. Nixon was very, very upset, and his wife, Pat, could control him. So everyone just kind of stood back, and he wanted to jump into one of the big convertible cars that they used quite a bit to drive around, you know, to the appearances and things. He drove all the way down to the border to Mexico, whipped around, and came back with the Secret Service having to be on the freeway going ahead of him to do this.
He was just driving out of frustration and anger.
Just to get away from hanging out at the Ambassador Hotel. So someone pushed the beautiful little daughters towards me because obviously...
Whose names were?
Oh.
Trisha and Julie.
Trisha and Julie.
Yes.
Julie was the younger of the two. Trisha was a pretty little fluffy blonde girl, you know, real charming. And Julie was a serious little girl that was observing everybody. And, you know, they were quite darling. And so I had to whisk them upstairs. Of course, their proper nannies and the people that were with them had to be found. You know, the arrival was so quick. So I got them back upstairs and into the room and got hot chocolate and toasted cheese sandwiches and set them down in front of the
TV. So you became the temporary nanny for the Nixon girls.
Richard Nixon
went off on a tantrum drive.
He had so much pressure on him. You could see the people that were pushing and prodding him.
Yeah. Well, let's move back to entertainment then. Photographers and Lauren Bacall. Does that trigger any memories for you?
Oh, yeah. But I had a chance to work for some wonderful photographers. Advertising campaigns, of course, always. Mm-hmm.
And Lauren Bacall?
So Lauren Bacall was in town to do a Sondheim musical company, I guess it was. And for her advertising career at the moment, she was featured in, it was a line of jewelry, beautiful ads that were in Vogue and Harper's and, you know, fancy magazines like that, and beautiful ads because she was a very beautiful woman. So we had her for about a week, just a few hours a day. The advertising agency guys, the creative directors, would always come up with things at the last moment to add to what we had been told we were doing. So we were at the new Otani Hotel, which was new. It wasn't even finished at the time. Mm-hmm. But there was a beautiful sushi bar restaurant that they were putting into it. So we were to shoot there. We're getting it all set up. One of the art directors or creatives from the ad agency said, "Oh, we should have a mink coat to throw over the back of the stool at the sushi bar." And she's getting made up, and you know, we're all in tight quarters. And she says, "I wouldn't be caught dead in a mink." And they said, "Oh, Miss Bacall, you know, what would you have over the back of your chair?" And she said, "Chinchilla," like that. So I've hopped into my Honda, and I had the mink coat because this fellow had said that, you know, prior to it, and I whipped it out when he called for it. I did make a phone call to the store in Beverly Hills, and I said, "Have you got a chinchilla?" So he says, sure. He says, "I'll meet you out in front." So I drove lickety-split, you know, Wilshire Boulevard and all the way out to Beverly Hills, and he's waiting for me, and he throws the chinchilla at me, and I hand him the mink, and I turn around to go back. And, of course, it was never shown in the picture.
After all of that, it was never shown in a picture in the ad.
Yeah.
With Port Townsend resident and show business veteran Lynn Webster, this is David Cunningham for KPTZ News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by David Cunningham. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio.